नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरा सच अ लार्ज गैदरिंग दैट इटसेल्फ इज वेरी इंस्पायरिंग टू मी इन रिगार्ड्स टू द टॉपिक दैट जस्ट बिकॉज यू ऑल have not given up on me, so how can I afford to? I cannot, so better I put up something in regards to what we have proposed to discuss this evening, a very very inspirational and motivational topic, never give up. In my childhood, I remembered from my childhood one short story in regards to this particular topic. As you must have experienced that, generally I remember such kind of incidents from my own personal life which were very inspirational to me, and so much so that so many years down the line, 15-20 years down the line, they are so much etched in my heart that they appear to be so fresh. So this was one teacher who was one of our role models that time in our secondary school, and she had narrated this nice little story of a soldier who was fighting the Vietnam War, and he was stranded alone, kind of cornered by the Vietnamese soldiers, and trying to just chase to protect his own life, he enters into a cave. Deep within the forest, he enters this cave, which appears to be like the only resort, the only refuge for this man to protect his life. But then he is also hearing the enemy soldiers, you know, their parades towards him, their marching towards him, looking for him because he was one of the generals of his army. And he's over there for hours and hours and hours, hoping and praying that nobody should enter into this cave. Because if anybody would enter into the cave, that's it. He was killed. He was dead. And after many hours, he found that there was a spider who was weaving a web on the mouth of the cave. Generally, spiders, that's what they do. That's the job description of a spider. So he was weaving a web face of that cave. And then as soon as this little spider finished weaving that web, he could hear the sound. The general could hear the sound of the enemy soldiers approaching towards this cave. And he could overhear, they were discussing that he could be in this cave, let's go and check it out. And because the cave was dark, they couldn't see him inside, but he could see them armed with all of their ammunitions. They were just ready to kill him at any given notice. So they approached. They were right there. He could see them. they were right there just about to enter the cave when one of the soldiers saw the web of the spider. And he stopped the others. He said, he cannot be here inside. Said, why? Why are you so confident? Just see, there is a web on the mouth of this cave. If he would have entered inside, he would have to break that web. He would have to pass through that web. But because there is this web, common sense, he would have not entered. And in that discussion, can you imagine the state of this king, this general now? What was happening in his heart? Imagine if we were there. And just in moments time, they all left. Now, this army man, this general, he was gathering confidence and he was saved. Obviously, he was saved. Saved by a little spider and its web. And later on, this soldier, his realization about this incident which took place in his life, saved his life. He writes his realization, it was a real incident. He writes his realization that if you have faith in God, then even if death approaching you, if you have faith in God, if death is approaching you, a thin fabric of spider's web can act as a, you know, fortified wall to protect you. And if you do not have faith, even the strongest of walls can become as feeble and weak as a spider's web. Now, with this little story, it was indicated that those soldiers, the enemy soldiers, the Vietnamese soldiers who were looking for this army man, this soldier, they gave up. Just looking at a spider's web, they gave up. So herein we begin our session tonight by understanding that only if, in fact, that particular soldier was one of the crucial soldiers, only if they would have caught him, you know, the story of the war at that time would have changed to some extent. Which means we may not know that the next step which we are taking, yes, we may not know whether that step would be favoring us or whether it would be detrimental to us. But that doesn't justify that we don't take further steps in our life. So I was inspired to come up with this particular topic when I heard about this gentleman. I'll tell about him to you. This particular gentleman, a very, very famous speaker, motivational speaker. He was so famous that whenever he would enter any auditorium or, you know, any place where the crowd was waiting for him, there would be a round of applause, a standing ovation before the talk and after the talk. Such a wonderful motivational speaker. And one speech which became one of the most popular speeches of this gentleman was when there was an auditorium full of people who were waiting for him, and he enters and he has a black hat and, you know, a cane, and there is a cigar, of course. We are accepting that with a pinch of salt now. So he comes, he enters, and everyone, you know, a standing ovation, round of applause. He goes on the stage. He puts down his hat, one side, puts down his cane. He sits on the raised platform, and everyone is awaiting now that yes, we are going to hear the words of wisdom from our favorite speaker. Now this person, to this huge gathering, to this huge audience, this person, he spoke only three words. That was the speech. That's it. Only three words. These were the three words he spoke. He again took his hat, his cane, his cigar, left. That was the most popular speech which this gentleman, Sir Winston Churchill, which he gave. In fact, he might have given hours and hours of speech all through his life, which were, yes, well received. But amongst all, when asked by the audience, this particular speech, comprising of only three words, was the best. Everything. Of course, now don't think that today we are just going to leave you with only these three words. So, please don't give up. So, this particular incident, when I came across, I was very much inspired to at least present something on this particular topic to our August assembly out here. We have some wonderful quotes to begin with. Every successful person has a painful story. Every painful story has a successful ending. Accept the pain and get ready for success. So many stories are there wherein we read about their success stories and what pedestal they reached, the platform they reached. But many times we fail to see that the path which they took was not a very smooth road. The path on which they walked and they reached, the ladder which they climbed of that particular success, was a ladder which was full of thorns and pebbles and pricks and all of that stuff. Like the famous example of Thomas Alva Edison. Light bulbs, you know, so many times we use this light bulb so casually and conveniently. 10,000 times he failed. He failed. But then when he was asked, he said that 10,000 times I have learned how not to make a light bulb. That was the attitude which he had in regards to the failures which he had encountered in his life. What else do we have? If you miss an opportunity, don't fill the eyes with tears. It will hide another better opportunity in front of you. Of course, when we fail in a certain attempt, and if our eyes are moist with some kind of tears, still it's good. At least your eyes are cleansed. Even if we don't accomplish anything later on, there is something happening that at least our eyes have become clean to have a clearer vision for the upcoming opportunity which is just round the corner, as they say. Another wonderful quote: what other people think of you is none of your business. You see, many times we just get into the syndrome, what the other person is thinking about me, what the society is thinking about me, how am I looking, and you know, what is my appearance in front of the society. And many times we just focus so much on the other people, the other aspects of life, that we lose focus on ourselves. So herein, just shut up, it's none of our business. No matter how we are, the world also has their own paradigms and attitudes as to how they will look at us. Srila Prabhupada, he used to tell a short story in this regard of a man who set out to sell his donkey. So he took his son along with him, that, you know, to teach the son also that how to trade and how to make business. So herein, three personalities or three entities, rather be correct. So the father, the son and the donkey. So now, since, you know, they had a donkey and donkey is used as an animal to carry loads. So the father, he told to the son that you sit on the donkey, and because, you know, you are my little lovely kid, so you sit on the donkey. So as they were passing the first village, when they were passing, the villagers just look at this person, and they were pointing at the little son, the little kid. Just look at the audacity, the impudence of this little kid, that the respectful old father is walking and shamelessly is sitting on the donkey. So the father heard that, and the father, you know, my son has been rebuked like this. So, okay, son, you get down. So he sat on the donkey. The next village, look at the shameless father. The poor child has to walk and he's sitting on the donkey like a donkey. So the father realized, what is this? You know, I tried that, you know, at least, you know, this village, the villagers would be happy. Then he got down, nobody will sit. Okay? Nobody will sit. Na rahega bas, whatever, like that. And then the third village, and they started ridiculing both of them. Look at them. They have a donkey and they are not making use of that donkey. What is the use? They have to walk. So then both of them sat. What happened? Guess what happened? The next village. How merciless these two people are. Kuch daya nahi bichare gadhe ke upar. Dono baith gaye. Dono lad gaye uske upar. So then at the end he got so frustrated. He picked up the donkey and put it on his shoulder. And then guess what? Who is the donkey now? That was the question. So he was trying to please. He was trying to please everyone. So therefore, we have, you know, a very, very striking example of how you try to please everyone, but if just one person is displeased with you, he can shoot you dead. 2nd October, Mahatma Gandhi, who was born, we celebrate Mahatma Gandhi's Jayanti. But he tried to please the whole nation. But there was one person who was not happy with him. Shot him dead. So herein we are trying to understand that it's not that we are not supposed to present ourselves in such a way that would be pleasing to others. But many times people, they just get so caught up in that psychology, in that mentality, that they lose focus. So it should not be at the expense of losing focus on what we are supposed to accomplish and achieve in this human form of life. However good or bad a situation is, it will change. It's raining outside, it will be sunny tomorrow. If not tomorrow, day after. If not day after few weeks, months, yeah, then we, where are the rains? We'll be looking for rains, we'll be looking for, you know, a weather which would be pleasing at that particular point of time. So understand that the material world has been designed in such a way that it is transient. Anything good, yes, shall pass, and anything bad also shall pass. So not get affected by that. That is the teaching of Bhagavad Gita also. Another very wonderful quote which I came across. Realize that life is a school and you are here to learn. Problems are simply part of the curriculum that appear and fade away like algebra class. But the lessons you learn will last a lifetime. How many of us sitting over here, do we remember every problem which we solved? Algebra. That was something, you know, it was like always a mountain to climb. And later on also, whatever we try to accomplish in our life, we are not asked about the details of what you did when you are getting trained on the path of your success, but the lessons which you learn on the way. So those lessons are the lessons which will always be imprinted in the core, on the throne of our heart, which has to be always coronated as the king of our life. Those lessons, those realizations. Be bold when you lose and be calm when you win. Very beautiful observations over here. When gold is heated, what becomes of that gold? Turns into an ornament. Beaten copper becomes wires. Depleted stone becomes statue. So, the more pain you get in life, become more valuable. What is that famous quote? No gains. Yeah. Yes. No gains without pains. No pains, no gains. So, like for a child to take birth, we all took birth. Some point of time we took birth. For a child to take birth, the child has to also undergo the pain as the mother has to undergo. It's called what? Labor pain. And then of course there is celebration. By the way, our Jugal Kishore Prabhu has become grandfather today, just few hours ago. And our Krishna Kalanti Prabhu has begotten a son. So, just remember that. So, herein we are talking about something. It's a paradigm again. How we look at something which is painful, something which is gainful. Herein, what else we have? No one can go back and change a bad beginning, but anyone can start now and create a successful ending. You know, when we talk about having divine qualities or somebody possessing demoniac qualities, it is said that, you know, every divine person or every saint had a past and every sinner has a future. So it all depends that whether we want to have divine qualities as an asset in our life or we want to have a future which becomes like a liability. And the future will become a liability when the present is misconstrued, when the present is messed up. And therefore we'll be discussing about the three aspects of the division of time, the past, present, as well as the future. Another wonderful thought, changing the face can change nothing, but facing the change can change everything. Don't complain about others, change yourself if you want peace. Many times in our life, we are standing at the complaint counter of our life with so many complaints about this person, that person. The fingers are always, you know, pointed towards so many different aspects and people and circumstances and time. And if not, we have discussed many times, the finger goes up. God. So herein, rather than cribbing and complaining, because that's not going to solve the problem, it's not going to do any good in regards to that person also, even if it's true, and in regards to the situation which has come up in our life. So therefore, rather than sitting and wasting time over that, making an issue out of it, you have to step up and see what is the end of the tunnel showing you. It might be dark right now, but yes, every dark tunnel has an enlightening end. Therefore, you know, this end you know, I was just going across some articles, and it said that when we talk about something which is ending, you know, end is, of course, in our life when we say that my childhood ended and I became a youth, then my youthhood ended and I went into the old age, and of course then death is something, the full stop. No, according to our scriptures, it's never a full stop, it's always a comma. You know the difference between full stop and comma? That yes, there is a pausage, there is a pause, but you know, always there is the next opportunity, which, you know, as it is said that when one door closes, when God closes one door, we have to understand, look around, there will be some door which will be opened, or even not any door, but a window will be opened, or some little hole, even through a keyhole, you get a light and you find that there is a ray of hope even in that. No one will manufacture a lock without a key. Have you seen any time that a lock is manufactured without a key? When you buy a lock, even if there is a, it's a number lock, the combination lock, so the combination is there. Why? To open it. So when you look at a lock, it might give a negative connotation also, that it's supposed to lock things, you know, locking things. And it's the same key which, you know, puts it to lock, and it's the same key which unlocks it. So similarly over here, when it talk about God, the problems which are given, He is our ever well-wisher, and therefore when He sends forth a problem in our life, that problem comes along, just like sometimes you read in some magazines, you know, some general knowledge questions and answers on page 55. Questions on page 15, answers on page 55, and they'll be, you know, distorted, like, you know, right side up, upside down, like that. So the solutions are there on some other page. So we have to understand that yes, we can directly go to the solutions, but if you directly go to the solutions, you won't understand that what was the question. If you directly jump on to the page where the solutions are mentioned in that magazine, you may not be able to even decipher that what were the questions at the first place. So therefore, He is such an examiner. Like I was just discussing with one devotee last week in Bombay, and the discussion was about chanting. You know, like many of our Hare Krishna devotees who are into this regimen of chanting Hare Krishna every day. It's really a big struggle to get up early in the morning, to take the mala in the hand, and to not just chant physically or verbally, but to focus. It's a great struggle to focus your mind, to, you know, eradicate the mind from all the other distractions and just focus on the holy name, the chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. And sometimes, you know, the mind is shouting loudly, just give it up, just go to sleep, or just do something else, just look at something else, just talk to someone. The mind is shouting and yelling. So I was thinking of this example of a boxing match. You know, in a boxing match within the rings, so you know, they have these categories: heavyweight, you know, the heavyweight, like, you know, the Tyson guys and all that stuff, heavyweight. And then, you know, there are others like, you know, medium, featherweight also. lanky people, you know, they're also, but the tussle is the same. Now imagine if a skinny lanky, a weakling, is put in front of a Hulk, you know, heavyweight Hulk. So herein, our situation during chanting is something like that. Our mind is like, you know, Mike Tyson. And we are like Charlie Chaplin. So what happens, you know, we start our chanting and then, you know, the other heavyweight one, the mind, you know, it's ready and it's well trained also. And who has trained? We. All these years, we have trained our mind how to keep punching us. So he knows where the weak points are. He knows where to punch, where to hit. So what happens? We start our first round and then we find that, you know, initially it's all that dodging going on. We try to dodge. In boxing, the dodging is very essential. You should know how to dodge. So we try to dodge, but how much can we dodge in front of this huge man? And we are within the rings already. We have the mala sitting amongst the devotees. We can't get up and leave also. And the other devotees will see, you know, that you are being beaten. Sometimes we go to sleep also. Imagine in the boxing ring, within the boxing ring, we are going to sleep in front of this heavyweight. So, but if we, just one mantra, not one round, but just one mantra of the Hare Krishna, if we just focus on it, attentively hear and pray to Krishna, that will be like one punch from our side to this, you know, huge bodied person, the mind. Just one punch. And yes, we may be beaten black and blue. You know, black and blue, everything is black and blue. We may be beaten black and blue by this huge heavyweight champion who has been always, you know, the champion and conqueror for so many years and lifetimes. Even if he, you know, just we are on the floor, right on our face landing, everything is bleeding. But if we sincerely have focused on our chanting, even for one mantra, at the end, the referee will pick us up. You know, at the end, have you seen the boxing? The referee, you know, everyone is waiting whose hand he will take it, you know, take up along with him. So we are on this side and the heavyweight on this side. Guess what? The referee will take our hand and will show to the others that he was victorious because the referee is Krishna. What else do we need? No matter what training we do or whether no training at all, if you have referee on your side. So Krishna, he is the referee and he is saying, you just enter the boxing ring. You just, you know, show from your side that yes, you can punch. And I'll take it. Hum sab dekh lenge. So he is there always. And he is there. It's not that he wants us to be beaten like that. But he wants us to just show our effort. As it is said, we take one step towards Krishna. And Krishna is ready to take not just 10, not just 100. Depending on the distance, he will take those number of steps. If somebody is just 10 steps away from Krishna, Krishna will take those 10 steps. If somebody is 10,000 steps away, Krishna, he can take strides and just one stride, he can cover all those 10,000 steps. So, that is the hope which we have. We have some more confident quotes. Confidence means not trying the doorknob once you have locked it. How many times have you seen people, you know, checking out, band hua ki nahi, band hua ki nahi. That's called being indecisive. So many times in our life also, there are situations where, you know, our confidence is checked. Yes, we should be careful, we should be concerned, but not so much that we keep on checking the doorknob and the party is over. Or the seminar is over. We are coming from our house checking whether, you know, the house is locked or the car is locked and like that. So, nobody holds a good opinion of a man who has a low opinion of himself. You know, nobody can take our self-confidence in something or anything unless we give it to that person. Unless we on our own open the doors and allow those thieves to steal away our high self-esteem. Herein, let's now try to begin to understand the reasons why somebody goes into this syndrome of giving up so soon, losing confidence. The first is fear of failure. You see, many times we have failed in our life. Is there anyone in this room who has never failed in any attempt, whether it is, you know, academics or whether it is any venture one has taken? All failures. Okay, so which means that there is a fear. The number of times a person fails, there is a fear which is installed by that failure. And that fear is that if I go ahead, attempt it another time, I might fail. Like there was this athlete, this was some year in the Olympics, and he was like, you know, he was not even in the count, he lost so miserably. He was not even in any count. And that day when he lost in that 100 meter dash, that sprint, then the Olympics, you know, the tournaments were over. The next day after the Olympics were over, this athlete, he started to run on the same ground. And when he was asked, because Olympics are every 4 years, so he was asked that, everything is over, my dear, what are you up to? I am preparing for the next one, which will be 4 years now, preparing for the next one. So that failure didn't have the capacity to instill a fear in this athlete's life. So therefore, one of the reasons that when we allow the fear of that failure to get installed in our system, then it will always give us the feeling of, you know, hopelessness and that giving up mentality. Underestimation. You see, we should understand that we are creations of God and God is all perfect. And our Upanishads also talk about that Om Purnamadam Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnam Eva Avashishyate. Isha Upanishad speaks about how the Lord is perfect and complete, and the creations coming out from the perfect and complete Lord is also perfect and complete. We just have to have the communion with the perfect and complete, and we'll find that we are also, you know, like this example is given, that a lollipop might be very fascinating when somebody goes to buy it, very fascinating and, you know, mouth-watering some object. And when somebody goes to buy a lollipop, along with the lollipop comes the wrapper. And the wrapper also gets the glory and, you know, the price of the lollipop. That's because the wrapper is attached. Like this year in my travels, UK, there was one devotee who came from Bombay, and this devotee had brought some Mahaprasad, some sweet, you know, some peda, something like that. He had brought from Bombay, and he was distributing to some of the ISKCON devotees there in London. And when he opened the box, he found that there were some few ants. They were feasting on that peda. And guess what? Those ants were made in India. Coming from India. So, I was just thinking about that. That these ants, they didn't require a passport, a visa. No flight tickets, no immigration checks, no security checks. And these little ants, they came all the way from Bombay to London. But how? How did they come so protected from Bombay to London? Because they were sticking to the Mahaprasad of the Lord. Mahaprasad ki?
Yeah.
That was the glory of Mahaprasad. They were sticking to the Mahaprasad of the Lord. So, similarly, you know, in Sanskrit, this is called Aropita Bhakti. Another example which our Acharyas give is of a worm. You know, a worm, what is the possibility of a worm to come on the altar of the Lord and associate with the deity form of the Lord? Now, if you know that on the altar, there are such strict rules about cleanliness and, you know, about hygiene, and things should be all very sacred. Definitely a worm will not be allowed to be on the body of the Lord. How can it be? Even we don't allow a worm to be on our body. But a worm, if, you know, like our Matajis, they make garlands. Sometimes in a flower, there is a worm which, you know, is hidden in the flower. And then the flower goes into the garland goes on the Lord, and the worm associates with the deity so closely. He is right on the chest of the Lord where Lakshmi Devi resides. Lakshmi Devi, she resides on the chest of the Lord. So this worm, this is called Aropita Bhakti. This worm, it got its way through on the chest of the Lord through the garland. Or that ant, it could go through because it was associated with the Mahaprasad of the Lord. So herein, yes, we may have our frailties. We may have our discrepancies, our shortcomings. But when we get attached to someone who is perfect, the Supreme Lord who is perfect, as Jesus Christ also said, knock and the door shall open, seek and you shall find. Because you may not be perfect, but your Father in heaven, He is perfect. And He is the one, He is going to give you the perfection of your life in regards to, you know, your endeavor. Hare Krishna. I think the microphone has given up. Any hopes? You can just give me that. This is another term, paralysis in analysis. We have spoken about this particular term in some of our previous seminars also, that
we don't have to analyze
Hare Krishna.
We don't have to analyze our situation, you know, in a very microtic way.
You know, as you must have heard about the micro management and the macro management. So many times when we go into the micro management syndrome, then we tend to get paralyzed. Like you know, if you are say going from one place to another place, of course you should manage, you should analyze that your travel and your destination and your tickets and everything, so many details, your luggage and everything. So imagine you are going in a plane, and over there you are trying to analyze how does the plane fly, and you know, how does it take off, and where does the pilot sit, and what's happening in the cockpit. Yes, of course, many times, you know, there is this fear is there, especially going in a plane, the fear is there. Anyone just gets up without any reason. Terrorist, lagta hai, kuch to hoga, hijack, something is going to happen. So always this fear is lurking. But of course we can't just sit and keep analyzing and, you know, bother about that so much. Like, you know, one time there was one man who was complaining to the air hostess, you know, that the light above him was blinking. Too much of blinking was going on. So he complaining to the air hostess that this light is blinking and it is, you know, troubling me. So the hostess was busy with other things, and you know, she said, just a minute, I'll be attending to you. No, right now, light is blinking like that. So he was so much finicky about that. So the air hostess shut down all the lights. Shut down all the lights. Okay, so now no blinking, nah? No flickering of the lights. Problem is solved. Okay. You know this one. And the passenger sitting next to him said, for God's sake, don't complain about the noise of the engine now. So, you know, when we are talking about getting into the analytical mode, we all have to, at a certain point of time, just live on faith. Live on faith. Like, forget about anyone else. We have to be faithful to our own body, which we do not know how it functions. We eat food, you know, do we know that from where it is passing, where it is going, what's happening inside, how it is getting digested? We just eat food and conveniently we go to sleep snoring, expecting that next morning I'll get up and my stomach might have done the necessary job the stomach has to do. How many times do we focus even on our own limbs? How the kidney, the liver, the heart, and you know, the stomach and all these limbs, they function within us. So over here, the point which we are making, that the focus is on faith rather than, you know, being very analytical and logical and that stuff. The focus is on faith. It saves time and it saves so much of confusion and conundrum. Then demoralizing association. Now, this is something which we all have to check out, because this world is full of negative as well as positive influences. And it becomes very subjective in our case also, individually. Like there is this story of a washerman who had a donkey. And of course, the washerman was, you know, getting things done because of the donkey. Dhobi ka gada. That combination is always spoken about.
So in this village, this washerman was so much banking upon this donkey, his pet personal donkey. It so happened that there was a dry well in the village, and this donkey, he happened to just, you know, go into that well. He fell in that well, dry well now, and the donkey, there was no way that the donkey could come out, and there was no way that they could lift the donkey. Like a remote village, they didn't have the facilities to lift the donkey out. So finally, this washerman decided that if the donkey is over there, and you know, let me try to protect the other animals from not falling into, let me bury him alive. Because anyway, the marne wala hai, let me bury him alive in the well. So what he started to do then? He started to pour mud into that well, and the donkey was looking up. Saab, aapka namak khaya. Expecting that the washerman, what are you doing? Is this what you are giving me in return, you know, of all my services? This is the gratuity superannuation you give me. But the donkey was not giving up. He was not giving up, although he didn't attend the seminar, but still he was not giving up. The donkey was not giving up. So when the mud was thrown on the donkey, so the mud fell on the back of the donkey. And you know, nature of animals, whatever falls, some foreign element falls on them, they shrug it off. You know, jhadka dete. So he shrugged off the mud. So when he shrugged off the mud, what happened to the mud? It came beneath his lotus feet. Whatever feet, it came beneath his feet. So then the dhobi was doing that, you know, pouring the mud, and he was shrugging it off. And what else he was doing? He would shrug it off and step up on the mud, shrug it off and step up on the mud. And like that, guess what was happening in due course of time? The donkey was coming up. And at one point of time, there was enough mud for the donkey to be on the brim of the well and jumped out. So the message behind this little story is that yes, in this material world there would be negative influences which might be throwing mud on us. But what we have to do? Remember two things. Shrug it off, step up. Shrug it off, step up. People will be throwing mud and so many, you know, kya bolte, keechad. So they will be throwing so many nonsense and negative things on us. We have to shrug it off and step up. Shrug it off and step up. So this is what we have to guard against, the demoralizing association. Here is another interesting concept. Living in the present. This particular figure is from the Roman mythology. This god is called the god of gates. The name is Janus. It's from the Roman mythology. And just look at the image. What do you see? Two faces looking in two directions. So it's very interesting that from this particular god, the god of gates, has come the month of January. Janus, from Janus comes the month of January. So what connection this has with living in the present over here? That January is a month from where, say, if we ask January, then January can look back into December. So January 2010 could look into December 2009 and also look into February 2010. So January is like that month which can look into the past and look into the future. So therefore, herein the lesson which is learned from this Roman mythological figure, Janus, is that when we think about the past, many times we regret the regrets of the past, looking into the past, and worries of the future, and we miss out the present. So we miss out the month of January, which is the beginning of the year. And in the month of January, rather than, you know, enjoying that particular month, we are looking into, oh my God, I drank so much 31st December, and this is the state and all that, and what all I have lost in the last year, and worries about the February. So it's a symbolic thing that how living in the present, which we learn from the month of January or from the God of Gates, the Roman mythological figure. Now what else do we have? Something very interesting. We tend to clutch our past so tightly that we fail to open our arms to embrace the present. And how many times it happens? Whether we are sitting in a seminar like this, whether we are doing our sadhana of chanting, or whether in the school, university, or in our office, we tend to go into the past, reminiscing or regretting, trying to ruminate on the past. And if not the past, we keep looking at the clock, worrying about the future. Lunchtime new, bhook abhi se lag rahi. Lunch mein kya aayega? Like sitting over here, at dinner mein kya banaya logne? Ye kya badbad kar raha hai? Kab khatam karega ye? So I am not going to give up because the topic is that. And you also please don't give up. So we tend to clutch it so hard. Yesterday was history, tomorrow is a mystery. Today is a gift of God, hence it is called present. Someone has very nicely put this forth, and therefore we have to use the past and the future, but to live the present in a wonderful way. So this is the example given, squinted eyes. Have you heard of that? Squinted eyes. Local language, what do you call that? Chakna, yeah. So many different chakna, what other things are there? Tirala. So herein, over here it is said that if our one eye is looking into the past, and if our one eye is looking into the future, then we don't have proper vision to see the present in front of us. So therefore, to have a straight, clear vision, we are not talking about physically over here, no offenses against anyone, but we are talking about the attitude of somebody who is just regretting about the past and worrying about the future and not living the present. Let's look into the worry statistics which we have in front of us. 60% of the things we worry about never take place. 15% of the things we worry about have already taken place. We can't do anything. We can't go back in time machine and change it. 17% of the things we worry about are people whom we can never change. Bolte na, kabhi sudharenge nahi. Only 8% of the things we worry about are real problems, and because of the other, whatever 92%, we don't have time to worry about the 8% which we should really worry about. So, there is nothing wrong about worrying in regards to future, in regards to the present scenario also, but we have to understand that, is it worth the situation or the person or the object, is it worth? So another wonderful quote, worry gives a small thing a big shadow. Also, it is said that worry is that interest which we have to pay on a loan which we have never taken. We keep on paying the interest on a loan which we have never taken, and that is worry. Another interesting quote on that. It's like a rocking chair. Takes you nowhere. Huh? That kind of that rocking horse also. It's a horse. You are sitting on a horse. It's a rocking horse. It's rocking, pacing back and forth. And then after 1 hour you see, you're still there. So many times, worry is like that. And it puts us in this mode of fear. Fear of the future. Worry which leads, gives birth to fear. So worry is the father, the parent of fear. But what is fear? If you make it into an acronym, false evidence appearing real. Now, is it good or bad to be fearful of something? Yes, there is healthy fear. Srila Prabhupada used to use this nice term called healthy fear. The example is always given of a student who has the fear of exams, because of which he opens the books and studies. You know, if the college authorities, they announce that no exams, Hare Krishna, who will even look at the book? Who will even come to the college? And of course, they will come to the college for other reasons. But as far as the studies and other things are concerned, who will care about that? So there is a healthy fear which gives the impetus to achieve something healthier also. So the opposite of fear is hope. So herein, when we are talking about not giving up on something in our life, we are talking about hope against hope. Have you heard that term? Hope against hope. So again, if hope is analyzed into an acronym, here is what the four letters, they give us the message. Harmonize our situation, which means harmonize with something divine, something transcendental, something beyond the modes, something which will help us in a positive, sacred manner. Optimize, which means don't just, you know, fantasize, imagine about that, but also do something about it. Optimize it. And yes, we have to prioritize, that there will be so many options given, even the good options, there will be so many good options given, put in front of us. But we should have the conscience and the intellect, the common sense, to prioritize that which are the things which I have to right now focus upon. And of course, we have to energize that with the proper association. Therefore, association is something which, whether you are in the spiritual circle or whether you are in a non-spiritual circle, association is something which is always so much talked about. Also, we have the 5P technique, something to again focus upon. The first P technique talks about planning that particular situation which appears to be inevitable. When we plan it purposefully, because there are many things in our life which we just keep on living, you know, coasting along the life. Ki jeevan ka uddesh kya hai? Kabhi socha hi nahi jeevan ka uddesh kya hai? Kyun main jee raha hu? Why am I living? So that particular stage should not come in our life when we do not have, we are like walking in dark, when we do not have anything in front of us to focus upon. So our life should be such that we plan it purposefully. There should be a purpose. As it is said that if you do not have anything which you can die for, you do not have anything to live for. So is there something so sacred? Is there something so passionate in my life that I can, yes, die for such a thing? That is something which we are worth living for then. So plan purposefully. Then prepare patiently for that particular plan which we have chalked out, which is meaningful, which is useful, then we have to be patient. Because yes, we may not get our plans sorted out according to what we have chalked out. Just like if you plan out that I am going to go from here, say, to Delhi. You may have the map. The map will show you the shortest route from Nasik to Delhi. But the map will not tell you where there will be traffic jam. The map will not tell you where there will be road repairs. So you have to assume that on the way there might be, especially in India, there might be traffic jams, there might be detours which I have to take, some road repairs, or the vehicle might break down and all that stuff. Indian Railways will take its own sweet time to reach its destination. So therefore, we have to be patient in regards to the execution of the plan also. Then proceed positively, because there might be short-term failures. There might be, we might be failing in the unit test. You know, like for a student, he might be failing in the unit test, but he has to be proceeding positively for the final exams and pursue persistently. So just focus upon here, everything is the P technique. It's very wonderfully put forth that we have to pursue that persistently, that no matter failure after failure, but always remember the example of the dark tunnel which has the light at the end of the tunnel. And of course, ultimately, we have to present in front of the Lord in a very prayerful manner. So whether it is a failure, whether it is a success, if we have sincerely put our heart and soul and effort in that, when we present it to the Lord, it is He who is going to give us the certificate of our success. So that is what, when we talk about never giving up with this particular technique, focusing upon. The story of four candles. In a house in the wilderness, a small boy, he was very fond of candles. So he lit the four candles, and there was a very deep inspirational message behind these four candles. That in the ambience of the quietness where these four candles were lit, the boy, who was so fond of these candles, the boy heard the candles speaking. So the boy heard the first candle was dying out. And as the first candle was dying out, the first candle said that I see that people no more require me. People no more require my light. So therefore, what is the use of me living if people are no more looking for me? And that first candle started to die out. And that first candle was peace. So peace was speaking out that people no more are looking for me. So therefore, what is the use of my living? So now, when peace was dying out, then the boy heard the second candle. And the light of the second candle also started to fade away after a while. And the second candle, as was fading out, the second candle also said that if people are not looking for peace, then how come I will have the faith in my own survival? Faith was the second candle which started to die out. So peace died, faith died, and the third candle, who was love, was also not having any strength to light on its own and, you know, light that dark room. So it was love also who was giving away and dying out. Now the boy was very much concerned that what's happening? One by one, my favorite candles are dying out. Peace, faith, and love. But the last candle spoke to the boy and said, no. I am there to relight the other three. And that last candle was hope. That was the last candle. And the last candle said, even if peace, faith and love dies, but if there is one candle lit on our life, that is hope, then we can relight the other candles of, you know, so many different qualities in our life. So therefore, this little short story of the four candles gives us hope. Not just hope, but hope against hope. So, learning from this little frog, even if there is one little strand of hope which is keeping us holding on, so let's hold on. And remember the story of the donkey, shrug it off, step up. So, herein, what sign is this? What sign is this? Minus. This is minus. So, when in our life, we are only living our life out of fear, then it is the minus sign. But you know, of course, this is the plus sign, and what is it? The hope. So if you talk about the plus sign, how is a plus sign made? Using two minus signs. It's just how you put it. So similarly, how you use fear and how you use hope in your life is something which will help us to never give up in any given circumstance. So herein, let's now go through some of the solutions which are very simple, which we know, but will keep reminding us as to how to be approaching a situation in the mode of never giving up, being realistic. Now, when we talk about being realistic, yes, one should have positive attitude. People talk so much about positive attitude. But positive attitude is not enough in itself. We should have the right approach also, the realistic approach also. Like, you know, the example is given that if you want to go to the Taj Hotel in here in Nasik, so you have your map. But the map which you are holding is the map about the Taj Hotel in Bombay. So, you are holding a map which takes you to some Taj Hotel. But it's not of Nasik, it's of, say, Bombay. But you will say, but I have positive attitude. I'm not pessimistic. I'm optimistic. Whether you are pessimistic, optimistic, you have to be realistic now. So simply just talking about positive attitude, no. How are you putting forth that positive attitude in a realistic manner? Like I'll tell you, this incident took place when we were being interviewed for, you know, the SSB, the Service Selection Board, for the fighter pilot. So there was a panel of the committee, the selection committee, and they asked a question. It was a tricky question, because in this they don't check your bookish knowledge, they just check that, you know, your common sense, your presence of mind. and your logical reasoning. So the question was asked, can you drop an egg on a concrete floor without cracking it? I said, yeah, get an egg. I can do that. So now this was like something which was very much, alarming to them, startling to them. He's also going to show that. He said, yes, get an egg, I'll show it. So I was holding the egg, and then the officer asked, I asked the officer, so, what do you want? Yeah, can you drop an egg on this concrete floor without cracking it? And I dropped. Guess what happened? The floor didn't crack. Because the question was asked, can you drop an egg on a concrete floor without cracking it? What? That was not told. That was not specified what. So, when we talk about being realistic, it is something which we have to just use a common sense and presence of mind. And therefore, when we understand things in a very realistic manner, then our approach will also be very simple and uncomplicated. So that is the beginning. Then of course we talked about living in the present. This is the second solution, that rather than cribbing about the past, rather than worrying about the future, when we focus on the present, living in the present, this is something which will help us a lot. Count your blessings. Are we in this position? No. But many times if we just analyze in this manner, that what are the blessings and boons which I have been gifted, even without asking, even without deserving. We can see with our eyes, we can walk with our legs, we can work with our hands, and so many things. Right now we are healthily sitting over here, although you might be troubled with your hunger, but still there are so many things. People, they don't even have a square meal to eat in this world. They have to worry, at least we don't have to worry about those basic necessities. So therefore, counting our blessings which we undeservedly are having in our life, many times we just take it for granted. Herein, do not compare with others. Here is the example. This is a mustard plant. In fact, there is a story about this, that a man who was very much frustrated and demoralized and disappointed and was giving up, wanted to commit suicide. And God started to speak to him, said that, once I planted a mustard, and how much time it takes for the mustard plant to come up? Maybe a week or just a few weeks. The mustard seed and the plant starts coming up, sprouting within just 7 days. And God said, along with that, I also planted a bamboo shoot. But the bamboo shoot, forget about 1 week, 1 month, 1 year, I was, cultivating, but nothing was being seen. Second year, nothing was being seen. Third year, nothing was being seen. Till 5 years, nothing is seen when the bamboo shoot is planted. Do you know that? For 5 years, nothing is being seen. Why? Because God said that for 5 years, the bamboo, it goes inside the soil to take its roots very strongly. And then after the 5th year, you see the bamboo growing very luxuriantly and strongly. And no matter what storm, what obstacle, what impediment comes, that bamboo shoot has rooted itself so strongly that it's very, very difficult, almost impossible for anyone to uproot it in that manner easily. So over here, if the bamboo would start comparing, that God, you made mustard, which started to grow in just 7 days, and you made me, which takes 5 years to even, you know, put up something in my life. But yes, it has been made in a certain way to take roots deeply inside for a valuable purpose. So therefore, not to be in this comparison mode, and of course, having faith in God. There was a man in, you know, one assembly where the speaker was talking about the existence of God. He shouted loudly, "But I don't believe in God because I don't see. Just because you are saying, why should I believe?" So the speaker called him, "Okay, can you come up and can you ask this question, because I'm not able to hear you so nicely." So this person, he walked up the stage and then he challenged. He said, "Only if you can show me your God which you are talking about, you know, can I put some faith." So the speaker, without even speaking a single word further, he slapped this man. Very tight slap. This man, you know, "What the hell are you doing?" So the speaker then asked, "What happened to you? Something happened when I slapped you?" "What do you mean?" So the speaker again slapped him, tighter than the previous one. "What are you up to? I just asked you a question. Answer that question. This is not the way." So the speaker asked, "Can you show me the pain? I slapped you twice and, you know, we are holding your chin. You're holding your cheeks. Can you show me the pain? Just like the pain you cannot show to the entire audience, that how much it is painful to you, but you are experiencing it. Similarly, God consciousness is like that. Yes, I cannot show you, here is God, surrender unto Him. But I can show you a way by which you can feel the presence of God within yourself. Just like you can't prove to us the intensity of pain which you are experiencing after I slapped you. It's just you, your way of experiencing that particular thing. So therefore, when we talk about faith in God, it is not something which we can just learn through some book. Yes, of course, they may be the guidelines, but at the end of that, we have to experience that God consciousness within us to have that implicit faith, and of course, service to others. The more we just live a self-centered life, the more we'll find ourselves in so much of complications, because the more I think about myself, I am so complicated, and that consciousness of I, me and mine makes me more and more complicated. But the more when I look at the world, then yes, I can see that how much the world is requiring, even if I am there to help one person become a better than me or better than someone else, then that will be a hope-giving situation in my life, which will be so much inspirational. And therefore, this personality, Dale Carnegie, in his book, he writes about how when we have simple living but high thinking, this is another way of how to live a life which is meaningful and which is useful. So therefore, in conclusion, here is, we learn a very simple lesson, a message given by a butterfly. If the butterfly is asked, how does one become a butterfly? What is the reply of a butterfly? "You must want to fly so much that you are willing to give up being a caterpillar. I guess all of us, we know that a butterfly was a caterpillar in a cocoon, but because it was so much desiring to fly, and therefore it got the name from caterpillar to butterfly. Of course, the original name was flutterfly. Later on, it was changed into butterfly. So, how much it was desiring that intense willpower, and that was made what made it to a butterfly. Now, herein we have a very, very inspirational and motivating story, which is one of the best which I have come across this particular year on this topic which we are taking up. This is a personality born in America, Jessica Cox. As you see, she doesn't have arms, no arms at all. And therefore, in conclusion of our talk today, I have kept this motivational real life incident of this lady who is showing by her example that how if one gives up, what happens, and if one doesn't give up, then what could be the outcome of that. So sit back, relax and focus and get inspiration from this wonderful, inspirational, motivational example of Jessica Cox. It is said that Jessica was born without arms as a result of a rare congenital disease. Like every child, she did not understand why she had no arms, as did the other children. It was difficult to be different in this manner. Definitely, very difficult to be different in this manner, having no arms at all. Regardless of that, she took part in different activities such as gymnastics, dancing and singing, frequently participating in large presentations. When she was young, she frequently felt opposed, downtrodden and on the verge of tears resulting from anger due to her lack of arms. Given this, she placed all her energy in the practice of sports. For Jessica, the main challenge of being born without arms was the constant perception of others more than the physical adversity. So this was how she is revealing her struggle as she was growing with no arms at all. That, you know, more than the physical adversity, what the people are looking at her and the demoralizing effect. I had the habit of becoming very upset when people would look at me walking in the street or eating with my feet. However, I learned to look only at the positive side of situation, and this gave me the ability to utilize these positive vibrations to become an example for optimism. So she was not giving up on that. Jessica considers her parents as role models to be followed and as pillars for her. She says, "My mother is my model, and she always told me that I could do all that I wanted to do. My father never shed a tear since my birth, as he does not consider me to be a victim. It is difficult to be the father of a handicapped person. He was my base during the difficult moments, and it was he who forged the person I am today. The first time I learned to drive a car, it was thanks to some modifications. The car was modified. Even with that, after having learned well, I decided to remove the modification placed in the car, and now I hold a driving permit without restriction." This is how she drives a car. If some of us, we know that how difficult it could be to drive a car using your feet on the steering wheel. Holder of a degree in psychology from the University of Arizona, she always attracts attention when she fills her car with gas on her own. She is able to write 25 words per minute, dry her hair, put on her makeup and wear her contact lenses at same ease as anyone else. If you just notice, we would have otherwise used our hands and fingers. She is using her feet to do all those shores. This is something which is amazing. Jessica, 26 years old and 1.55 meters tall, is the first lady in history to pilot a plane without any arms. An armless pilot armed with faith and conviction, not giving up. This inspiring lady and heroine for numerous persons always radiates hope and joy and is a living proof of conviction. On Mother's Day last year, she flew an airplane alone by herself without anyone accompanying her with a signboard saying, "Look, Mom, a winged plane flown by an armless pilot." She flew alone by herself. That day, she registered approximately 130 hours of flight time by herself. And this is, she is sitting in the cockpit alone, flying a plane. So she says, "I do not have arms, but that is not what determines where I can go. Our great fear is not so much to not be up to measure, it is that we are stronger over and above all measures. The greater the difficulty, the greater the glory." Thanks to her confidence, her preparation, ambition, Jessica has traveled a long path to become that which she is today. After becoming an outstanding speaker, she is also a children's guide in the International Network of Children Amputees during the last 5 years. She hopes to marry and have children, and she says, "I know that it will be difficult to form a family, but I know that I will be a good mother." And this is something which puts one in tears when she says, between laughs, "The hardest part will be when the bridegroom will ask her hand from her parents." And finally, her message to all of us who are attending this seminar, and for you, what do you lack to touch the sky? And the message which she is giving, never give up. With our bodies intact and our minds, if we just work upon it, will be intact. Why should we give up? Why should we complain? Why should we worry? And that was the message given by this inspirational, motivational personality, Jessica Cox. And the take-home message for today is, our worst days are never so bad that we are beyond the reach of God's grace, and our best days are never so good that we don't need God's grace. And having so much faith in the mercy and the power of the Lord, we should go on and on in our pursuit, whether it's Krishna consciousness, whether living a meaningful life which will be useful and ultimately joyful for ourselves and for humanity at large. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. I am thankful to all of you who didn't give up on me, as I had seen at the very outset, and I hope and pray that whatever we have discussed, if it helps you even in a fragmental way, a little fraction of that, if it helps, then that will be something which will help me also to not be in that attitude of giving up, but rather be in the attitude of never giving up. Hare Krishna. So we have some announcements for you before we have our kirtan.
Thanks a lot for patient hearing. Now, may I request the participants who have came over here for the very first time to stand for a minute? Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot for taking your valuable time. And